series of the Firm Foundation, Life in the Garden. So there's some things, I'm kind of give you a heads up about some things we're going to talk about. Remember, life was still perfect. So we're going to do a little, we're going to talk a little bit, we're going to talk about death, we're going to talk a little bit about marriage, some things that were, and when we talk about some of these things like marriage, this is, it's from the standpoint of everything was perfect, exactly the way God designed it. So when we talk about this is how the man and the woman are together, this is perfect, and your tendency may be to go, oh my goodness, I've already messed it up, there's no hope. Well, you see, God has a provision for that. For the way you've already messed it up, and for the baggage that you bring, God already has a provision for that, but it's still a good thing to understand God's perfect design of these things, of life, of marriage, of all these things. We understand God's perfect design, and then we'll be able to understand His solution to how we have messed it up. So we won't give you all the answers today about how to fix it, but I do, those things are coming. So we will talk about those things. But today is life in the garden. And we already know from what we've learned that God made Adam. So you say, okay, I knew that. Well, but for all these things we look at here, they are so foundational to things we're going to learn later. So we're going to reemphasize. There's some truths we're going to... So God made Adam. You think, okay, He made... But think about that. We did this Firm Foundations one time. We did this in the inner city area. And we're in this home, and it was just packed. And so we did a lot of the people there were really willing to just interact and engage. And so we acted out a lot of things. And so I had one of the young men, Jason. You've met these people. They've been to visit us. Some of you have met them. So Jason Brown, and how old was Jason? He was a young teenage boy. And so I had him lay on the ground. So here God had made Adam. God, everything there, everything was needed. He had his heart, his lungs, his muscles, his brain. Everything was there, but he had no life in him. What would a scientist or a biologist come up and they could do nothing? Even if all that was given them, they could do nothing because there he is, lifeless. He's never had life in him. The physical comes first and then the spiritual. So he's laying there. Everything's neat, but there's no life in him. And so then I had one of the other guys, one of the men, Steve Wittenberg, who you've also met, many of you, if you remember him. So there's Jason. We're in this little packed room, if you can picture that. And there's Jason in the middle. And they're just on the edge of their seats just watching. There's Jason. I'd already coached him beforehand. He's laying there, not moving, nothing. You can't even tell he's breathing. Steve gets up, walks over, leans, takes a knee and leans down. And all of a sudden, Jason looks up and looks around. Like, God breathed the breath of life into his very breath, his life. He became a living being by the breath of God. God gave him life. And that was the picture. That was the picture he wants to give us. God gave Adam life. He breathed and he became a living being. And God was providing life. And then God was going to provide for all of his needs, his food. Now, he was going to be given responsibility. But God wanted him, he gave him responsibility. And then at the same time, then Adam turns to God and he says, how? And God said, this is what I wanted. I gave you everything. I gave you responsibility. Now you turn back to me, rely on me. I'll give you what you need. And that thing, that's how it was working. It was perfect. So he had meaningful work. God was going to provide relationships, everything for him. So let's go quickly. Now you'll notice here in Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2, we're going to be back and forth because they tell this of the same events. Chapter 2 gives a little more detail than chapter 1. Chapter 1 is this big, boom, overview. Chapter 2 comes back and fills in some of the details that we need to know. So we'll be back and forth between the two. So Genesis chapter 1, verses 27, 29, and 30. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Then 29, then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth And every tree that has fruit with seed in it, they will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth, and to all the birds in the sky, and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. And it was so. You'll notice they didn't eat meat. They were vegetarians. That's sad. At that time, really, it was not sad. It was not. Remember, everything was perfect. There were enough nutrients. There was enough flavor. I mean, I think the food we have now could not compare to the food that they had in the garden. It was absolutely nutritious. It was absolutely flavorful. You get a little bit of this, all the different colors of fruit and vegetables. You get all these, like, God just provided this abundance. So everything was perfect. And now, but later, and you get this when you go through chronologically, we're going to find there's going to come a time when God says, no, now it's time, you're going to need to eat meat. And so he gives that permission later for that to happen. But we'll get to that then. So then let's go over to Genesis 2, 7 and 8. Then the Lord formed a man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And the man became a living being. So you have all these theologies you're going to run into out there. And some of them say you existed as a spirit or some kind of thing like that. And this just plainly lays it out. No, God made the physical first, and boom, he added the spirit. He gave the breath of life. God made man, and God made him to rely on, God made man to rely on him. He desired him to do that. There's this relationship is set up, and he gave man contentment when he did do that. When he responded to God in the way God directed him and he relied on him, God gave contentment. You're going to see this repeated theme throughout the Bible. So you have this, remember we had this principle. There's all these principles. These are foundational, like design, designer. Here's another one that we've already touched on, creator, owner. So God is preparing the earth to be inhabited. It's obvious when you watch this. It's just like every day he's adding, every day he's preparing it to be inhabited. It's like when a new baby is coming, you know, a young married couple and a baby's on the way. What do? They're just excited to go. What color are we going to paint it? What about the crib? What about the decorate? You know, it's an exciting time. The baby's not here yet, but they've got the room ready. And you can look at it like this. God is actually excited for mankind to arrive on the earth, and he's just like making this special place. You have the whole earth, and you have this very special place, the Garden of Eden, that he's preparing. And as we already talked, you see, God made them. He actually made them. He owns them, just like he made the angels. He owns the animals. He knew what was best for them. He didn't ask anybody, where should I play? Or create the man and they say, where you want to live? No. Here, I've made this place for you. You don't ask the baby who comes home from the hospital, where do you want? No, this is your room. It's perfect for you. Here's the monitor. This is everything. This is the room for you. Adam and Eve, this is the place for you. This is the Garden of Eden. He had prepared the place for them without any counsel. Let's go to Psalm 24, 1 and 2. So you guys got to turn with me so you don't get bored in between time. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. He founded it on the seas and established it on the waters. You know, it's you can think, you may have been in a bad place before, and you think, it's a terrible thought, but you think, what gives God the right to, you can just stop right there. Because he has all the rights. He owns you. He knows exactly what is best for you. Then you look at his attributes. He is perfect. He is loving. He is kind. He knows everything. He's out for your best interest. So he put all those things together. He has the right to do as he pleases with us. Let's go to Psalm 100, verse 3. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. And you're going to pick up on this, one of these things about us, about mankind. God desires this response. And you see, it's not necessarily inappropriate. If I get up here and I teach this lesson and I run back to the back and I sit down in my chair back there and I wait for everybody to come back and praise me for what a great job I did. You know, that's inappropriate, really. You know, that's not, if you want to do that, fine, I appreciate that, but that's not for you to come back and praise me. That's not really for me to look for that, it's not the right thing. But for, you see, we are not God. God is perfect. There's not an imperfection in Him. And so one of the things that He put in us is that there's satisfaction from us when we are thankful and we return praise to Him. He built us like that. We're going to learn some more. It's good to understand what the designer, how He made us so we can operate in that fashion, in a sense, so we can have contentment and joy. And so when we respond with praise, He made us and designed us in that way. Let's go to 1 Chronicles 29. 1 Chronicles 29:11. Yours, Lord, is the greatness and power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor, for everything in heaven and earth is yours. This stuff is so foundational. If you forget these foundational blocks and how you live, you're going to go astray. It's just foundational. So like the angels, we belong to God. The earth belongs to God. We may be managers, we have responsibility, but it belongs to God. He gave us responsibility to care for the earth. Now, we're going to discover some other things that God gave us a responsibility to do. So stay tuned. We'll get to some of that today. So He has the right to tell us the path in life to go. Now, He gave us a will for what? What choice is there when there's not a choice? You know, there has to be a choice. We're going to pick up some more on that today. God gave us a will, but He said, this is the path in which you are to walk. This is where you're to go. We have to get this foundational principle. He has a right to do that. That's His right to do that to us. To say, this is where you go. This is how you live your life. And we can say, no, I'm not going to do that. And we can make that choice. But we also have to remember, He's proven, if you read carefully here, He's proven His care and His concern, especially you talk about the Garden of Eden. He's just such immense variety in the food, in the plants, and in the creation, and everything was just so, God just proving His care, His love for mankind. And so, He wants it, in a sense, He wants to make it an easy choice for us to follow His path, but there's still, we have a choice. Now, a couple things we need to understand here is this was a different environment in which they were put into in the Garden of Eden, and Ken already referred to that earlier. But let's go back to Genesis chapter 2. So, you'll see here that there was not the same water cycle, hydraulical cycle that we have today of evaporation from the oceans, the clouds moving over, land masses with the great masses of air moving, and then the water coming down as rain. That cycle did not exist. We didn't have that cycle. Because of that great, the canopy that was the protection that was surrounding the earth. You didn't have that same thing. But we had rivers, they had rivers, and a lot of scientists think these rivers, and we still have signs of this today, of this high pressure, possibly heated water, but high pressure and forcing the water out. And you have this, and down in Florida, they have these springs, that if you've ever seen these, Itchituttany Springs is one, where all of a sudden there's a river. It's like, there's this, it's wider than this room. And you look down, and 50 feet down, there's a crack in a rock, and the water is just coming out. It's like, whoa, how's it doing that? And so that's the implication, is that type of rivers that we had in the Garden of Eden. But there are also like this mist that would come up, that would like rivers of mist to water the plants, the lush vegetation that they had. So think about that as we read some of these verses. Genesis 2, verse 4. I know I'm hurrying here because I want to get to the good. There's some good stuff I want to get to about marriage and stuff that we want to touch on. So we'll get through this. I won't say anything about Ken, not leaving me enough time, but we'll get into that later. Verse 4. This is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created, when the Lord made the earth and the heavens. Now no shrub had yet No shrub had yet appeared on the earth, and no plant had yet sprung up. For the Lord had not sent rain on the earth, and there was no one to work the ground, but streams came up from the earth and watered the whole surface of the ground. That's that mist they're talking about. Because a stream doesn't come up and water the whole surface of the ground. There was another system in place. It was not our hydrological system that we have today. Then the Lord had formed a man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. Now the Lord had planted a garden in the east, in Eden. There he put the man he had formed. The Lord made all kinds of trees grow out of the ground, trees that were pleasing to the eye and good for food. In the middle of the garden were the tree of life and the knowledge, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Let's skip down here to verse 10. We'll get to this good and evil tree. Well, that's where we are. We'll just read on. A river watering the garden flowed from Eden. From there it was separated into four headwaters. The name of the first is the Pishon. It winds through the entire land, the land of Havilah, where there is gold. The gold of that land is a good romantic resin, and onyx are also there. The name of the second river is Gihon. It winds through the entire land of Cush. The name of the third river is Tigris. It runs along the east side of Ashur, and the fourth river is the Euphrates. Now, these are not the same. These names are familiar to you, right? But these are not the same rivers that we have today, okay? Other rivers were named by these names, but this whole environment was changed. This does not really exist like this now, and we'll talk about the flood really changed this whole environment. So we'll get some more details. So these names were borrowed from Scripture and applied to those rivers that were in that same general region. So here we have this mist, this different water cycle. Adam names the animals, and he discovers something there, that there's no true fellowship there. He is not of the same kind of any of the animals. And they're not made, there's none of them that are made in the image of God. They're awesome, they're wonderful. There was probably some different level of communication that we get glimpses of today between Adam and the animal, but still it's not the same. And so we know what God's going to do to fix that. But first, let's talk about this other, these trees in the garden. So unless there's a choice, there's not really a choice, right? So all of this stuff we've talked about, relationship, perfect relationship, all these things, and now we have this one that we just read about. There's the tree of life. They eat from the tree of life and they will live. If they eat the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, what happens? They die. Now, there's that warning comes with eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. They knew all about good, right? Adam and Eve knew all about good. Everything was good. It was wonderful. Can you imagine they had this marriage, this relationship? They didn't bring any baggage. Did you bring any baggage into your relationships? Go ahead, nod your head. Yes, you did. And you know that other person did too, didn't they? Especially them. Baggage. We bring it with us. They had no baggage. Could you imagine that? This perfect relationship? You can't, can you? I came in this morning talking about a little baggage. So, this perfect, I won't. That perfect relationship between the man, between God and man, between the man and the woman, between the woman and God, this thing is, everything is perfect. And they have this choice, though. Or there wouldn't, without choice, there's no real love. There's no choosing to worship God. They have this choice. They could eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, but there's something would happen if they did that. If man chose, remember, God gave him a path to go down. That's his. But man could choose his own path. He could choose to be independent of God. This is a critical block in our foundation. Understand this. We won't spend that much time on it, but you need to understand it. So verses 16 and 17, I think we already touched on there. But and the Lord God commanded the man, you are free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will certainly die. Now, remember, they didn't know of evil. They didn't know guilt. You know, that thing we are all so familiar with, even if you don't recognize that you have it, guilt, shame. They had none of that. All they knew was good. Yeah, wow, that's right. And if they, but they had a choice. They could choose independence from God, and they could experience what that was like. You see, it's amazing to me that we don't pick up on this. More people don't pick up. It was not some horrible sin, like maybe whatever you could think of. Think of the worst sin, even murder or adultery or whatever you could think of. It wasn't something like that, was it? Eating from the tree. Come on, God. It was like that for a reason. There is a consequence for going your own way apart from God. Now you tell me, what is the consequence? Tell me. What's the consequence of eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil? Death. That is foundational to understand the rest of the Bible. Foundational to understand the rest of the Bible. Death is the consequence. It's the punishment for going your own way, choosing to go your way apart from God, choosing to disobey God. Now, so we got to talk a little bit about death, okay? Before we get to the fun stuff, we got to talk a little bit about death. So, death in the Bible, now a lot of times in the world out there, death means, a deer dies in the forest. He's dead, he's gone, he rots, that's it. That's kind of, he's annihilated. That's what we think. Now, that same thought can be, like, death is just the end of it. No, in the Bible, it does not mean that. Death means separation. Now, there's a place in the Bible where there's a man dying and said, "Receive my spirit, O God." Like, whoa. Separation is what it means every time in the Bible. So the first kind of death. So, I can remember all this stuff. I remember reading this stuff as a kid, and I'm thinking, hey, ate from the tree of knowledge. They didn't die. They lived another 800 years. They didn't die. It's like, if we go out here and there's evergreen, there's pine tree out here, and we rip the branch off, and I bring it in a set on the table here, we'll come back next week, it's still going to be green. Still green. But you know what? It's going to die, isn't it? Because why? I've removed it from its life source. I've removed it. Adam and Eve were removed from their life source, separated from God. Death is the separation. So, the first kind of death is a physical death. They were going to die. Their bodies were going to die. So that did not happen immediately, but it did happen. The second kind of death is the death of a relationship. When did that happen? Bam! Immediately. And you see it on their face. When they bite into the fruit, it's shame, it's guilt, it's separation from God. Death of a relationship. It happened immediately when they rebelled against God and they went their own way. It was death of a relationship. It is so profound that in the Bible, it talks about people that are walking around physically alive, and the Bible speaks about them as being dead. Dead in their trespasses and sin. It's a real thing. Death of a relationship. And the first one is the tragic. It's so tragic. It's the death of future joy. It's eternal death. The second death, Revelation calls it, the second death. That means that death, when that one happens, it lasts forever, separated from God, separated from joy, separated from wonderful eternal plans for you. That's eternal death. So those are the three kinds of deaths. Those may or may not be on your homework when Kent asks you those next week. Three kinds of death. So here, God created us for His glory. You think, well, that's a little bit selfish, isn't it? Remember who God is. Remember, this is not selfish of God. And He made us in a way that when we reflect Him, we live for Him, when we praise Him, that it brings us joy. We were created with a will so that we could choose to honor God, so that we could choose to obey Him. And God deserves all honor and praise. Go to Revelation 4:11. I tried to figure out a way this morning to have y'all read these verses, but we just couldn't figure it out. You are worthy, our Lord and God, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they were created and have their being. We'll talk about this some more in a minute, but you see, God created us in a way, some people have termed it the God-shaped vacuum. That we, when we reflect, when we give back to God His praise, when we are engaged with God, it fills up this God-shaped hole in us. Ecclesiastes calls it, God put eternity in our hearts. You see this with all over the world, not just in believers. You see it in people. They see this. They see the sunset and the glorious colors, and it stirs up something inside. That's speaking of eternity in their hearts. There's more. There's more. There's more. There's more. It screams at them. You got to put that down though, because something, it's uncomfortable. So people put that down. So God created us to know Him, and everything works best when we are responding to God, we're reflecting His character, and we're honoring Him. And that's the way it was in the garden. And God took some care here to give us this special thing, this information about marriage. But let's look at Genesis 1:20 again real quick. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sky and the sea and the birds, the fish in the sea, and the birds in the sky, and over every living creature that moves on the ground. We do have flying fish down in Georgia, so that does. Adam and Eve fulfilling God's purpose together. You see, you could call this section, I could retitle this section, you have a big job. Do this job with your partner, your spouse, and rely on me, and things will be pretty doggone close to the Garden of Eden. So let's talk about this a little bit. This is so far from our experience, but let's remember, we're going to talk about the fix of this stuff later. But here's the way it was in the beginning. So here's Adam, formed out of the dust of the earth. The breath of life is breathed into him by God Himself. Then God Himself, He doesn't take from the dust of the earth and form the woman, does He? This is significant. He takes out of the man's side his flesh and bone, and He fashions a woman, and He brings her to the man. In the Hebrew, our English reflects it too. It's the man is Ish, and he sees the woman, he goes, Isha, this is perfection. This is perfection. This is like the other half of me. This was what was missing. This is it, God. This is it. And God does something with this that one flesh. Really, you think about this one flesh. And the Bible talks about this ripping and tearing, and no man is to make this happen. This is not to happen where there is no divorce. God hates. So, listen, if you've had some of this in your life, I'm telling you, God has a fix for this. But I'm talking about the Garden of Eden, the way God originally intended it. So out of the man, he takes the woman, and she has things that he doesn't have. He has attributes and gifts. They have a job to do, remember? To manage the earth. It's a big job. It is a big job. We miss that. Now, today, in the New Testament times, He has given us a job to do. I'm not going to talk to you about that job, but He's given us a job to do, and He intends us to do that in partnership together. He tells the man, you're the leader, but He doesn't. You know what that is? That's delegated authority. He gives the woman delegated authority too. Does the woman have authority to kill her children when she's mad? No, she doesn't have that kind of authority. The man doesn't have that kind of authority in his home. He has delegated, limited authority. And the woman also has this, but he is. When God said to Adam, look, there's two trees in the garden, you're not to eat from this one. It doesn't say Eve was standing there. He must have run and said, Eve, listen, God told me this thing. We got to talk about this. So he was responsible. It calls the woman the helpmate. And people go, oh, that's the Bible. It's so, you know, that is the exact same Hebrew word that God refers to Himself, the helper. The Bible used the exact same word to refer to the woman. The helper. There is this partnership, this giftedness, this difference that is absolutely critical to the purposes and the calls of God and the world. And He's given us that job and that purpose to do, and He intends us to do it together. Everything from the two becoming one, I don't want to get too explicit here, but when it says that the marriage is consummated, there's a physical union that takes place between the man and the woman. It's physical, but it is spiritual. It's something happening. It's like communion in the church. When we take communion, It's like we are commanded. It's symbolic, right? It's symbolic. It's communion. We remember the death and the sacrifice. But it also, we're also told it does something spiritual to us. That's why we do it on a regular. We do this. We don't. The man and woman don't consummate the marriage once and that's it. No, it's like this. It happens on a regular basis because it's symbolic of unity, and it creates unity. And it's not to be played games with. It's this thing. It's this oneness and this unity of the husband and the wife. And it's pure and it's holy and it's made by God and it's not made by man. And there's a purpose and a joy in it that gives a picture of unity and oneness. And we are to have that in our marriages, and we're to have that kind of unity, and we're to move towards unity to where we together fulfill the call of God in the world. It's huge. If you're not moving towards unity in your marriage for the purposes of God in the world, you're missing the Garden of Eden. This is not about just making our little family happy and content. It's not about that. It wasn't even about that for Adam and Eve. You have a job to do, Adam and Eve, and you are going to have contentment if you rely on me to do it. Why? It tells us later in chapter 3, in the cool of the day, they would walk with God and talk with Him. Why? Because they were like, God, what do I do, man? What do I do about that forest on the north end of Eden? I don't know what is going on there. God says, well, let me tell you what you do. I've given you everything you need to take care of that. They had to come to God there every day in this intimacy, this fellowship with Him, and they came together to God. There was this oneness, and that oneness in their relationship illustrated something about the oneness and the unity of God, and they were not to let go of that. They were not to let go. It was serious all through the rest of the Bible, even after they left the Garden of Eden. It was serious business, and there was a ripping and tearing if there was a separation of that husband and that wife. They were to maintain and work towards and fight for that unity to fulfill God's purposes. They were created to be a friend of God, down on the F on your outline. In verses, did we read 29 and 30? So they were created to be a friend of God. This thing of there's this emptiness of us if we are not fulfilling this intimacy with God. If we're not conversing with God, if we're not walking in guiltlessness, if we're not having that with God, then we have this vacuum. We could be the most believing person in the whole world, but we can have this vacuum in our heart because God is not filling that vacuum. And there's something that comes between. And this is, when you read from the very beginning throughout the whole Bible, let's learn some things about God as we read this. Relationships are important to God. It's everything from the man and the woman to the children to even the beast of the field. Every relationships, God is just all about relationships. Take care of relationships. And if things go awry, get them fixed as far as you are responsible for. That's all you're held to. So that's the way it was in the garden. It was perfect. It was fulfilling. God gave them a job to do. They had a responsibility. They had everything they needed to do it. They had to turn to God and rely on Him to do it. And their fellowship with one another, their fellowship with God, oneness. And it was perfect. So let's close with this. Is what have we learned about God? What have we learned about God? You think, what if I ask you, write down on your note, pay on your back here of your bulletin or somewhere, write down everything that you've learned about God so far. Don't write it down yet, because I want you to do a little exercise here. I want you to close your eyes and think. So we're going to shut out our distractions just for a minute. I want you to think. Start thinking. Everybody here, close your eyes. I'm not going to look at you. Close your eyes, and you think about God. Now I'm going to give you some words. Some things to help to guide your thinking a little bit. What have we learned about God so far? He is sovereign over all. He is the creator. He is all-knowing. He is all-powerful. He alone existed in eternity past. He desires you. He desires mankind to know Him, to be in friendship with Him, to be in fellowship with Him, to reflect Him. He is unique. He is the one and only. He is loving. He is caring. He is holy. And He is righteous. Now you can open your eyes. And there's something else too. Is that God demands death as the penalty of sin. Now, in one sense, that's leaving you hanging a bit because God has an answer to that. And I know most of you know. But it's okay that we build some, you know, a good story builds suspense. You know how, you know, if you watch a series, they always leave you hanging. Then the next week, you know, it builds suspense. God, where do they get that kind of thinking from? They get that kind of thinking from God. Because He's chronological in His storytelling. And He leaves us hanging a bit. Death. He is holy and He is righteous. Death is the payment for sin. You think, no, but God is loving and God cares. Yeah, but He also is holy and righteous. How does He bring the two together? It's something only God can do. I'll tell you. When you start to look at it, only God can bring those two together in a perfect way to fix it. But we won't get to that for quite some time. God will not be back in the corner. You can be sure of that. So do we have a song or anything? Oh, we do? Cool. Let's do it.